Hosea chapter 4, and tonight, as we look at this, it's an interesting chapter. It's got some good stuff in it here for us to learn, but the theme of the chapter is that God presents Israel an indictment or an accusation. All right, so God's just speaking to Israel and saying, you guys are guilty, and he was just charging them with their sin. And as we look at where we've been and where we're headed, we've covered the orange parts here. The prodigal wife, her unfaithfulness, her punishment, her restoration, and Israel's restoration, and her redemption. Tonight we're going to be looking at the first part of the second section, and that the prodigal people and the message of God's judgment that actually covers chapter 4 to 10, and then tonight the indictment in chapter 4. All right, so that's where we're at for this evening. And as we look at the beginning of this here, I want to play the chapter again so you get your Bible, follow along, so you can, you'll gain more from it, and it'll sink more in if you follow along in your Bible as Alexander Scorby reads it to us. It'll be help to you. Hosea chapter 4, and you listen along as he reads.
Chapter 4. Hear the word of the Lord, ye children of Israel, for the Lord hath a controversy with the inhabitants of the land, because there is no truth, nor mercy, nor knowledge of God in the land. By swearing, and lying, and killing, and stealing, and committing adultery, they break out, and blood toucheth blood. Therefore shall the land mourn, and everyone that dwelleth therein shall languish with the beasts of the field and with the fowls of heaven. Yea, the fishes of the sea also shall be taken away. Yet let no man strive, nor reprove another. For thy people are as they that strive with the priest. Therefore shalt thou fall in the day, and the prophet also shall fall with thee in the night, and I will destroy thy mother. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because thou hast rejected knowledge, I will also reject thee, that thou shalt be no priest to me. Seeing thou hast forgotten the law of thy God, I will also forget thy children. As they were increased, so they sinned against me. Therefore will I change their glory into shame. They eat up the sin of my people, and they set their heart on their iniquity. And there shall be like people, like priest. And I will punish them for their ways, and reward them their doings. For they shall eat, and not have enough. They shall commit whoredom, and shall not increase, because they have left off to take heed to the Lord. Whoredom, and wine, and new wine, take away the heart. My people ask counsel at their stocks, and their staff declareth unto them. For the spirit of whoredoms hath caused them to err, and they have gone a-whoring from under their God. They sacrifice upon the tops of the mountains, and burn incense upon the hills, under oaks and poplars and elms, because the shadow thereof is good. Therefore your daughters shall commit whoredom, and your spouses shall commit adultery. I will not punish your daughters when they commit whoredom, nor your spouses when they commit adultery. For themselves are separated with whores, and they sacrifice with harlots. Therefore the people that doth not understand shall fall. Though thou, Israel, play the harlot, yet let not Judah offend. And come not ye unto Gilgal, neither go ye up to Beth-Aven, nor swear the Lord liveth. For Israel slideth back as a backsliding heifer. Now the Lord will feed them as a lamb in a large place. Ephraim is joined to idols. Let him alone. Their drink is sour. They have committed whoredom continually. Her rulers with shame do love. Give ye. The wind hath bound her up in her wings, and they shall be ashamed because of their sacrifices.
Okay, so as we see this, there's a lot in there. You can see he's again, all through this book, Hosea uses a lot of similes and metaphors, pictures for us to try to help us to understand, but in his day, they understood a lot of those things, and some of them are kind of foreign to us, and so we're going to have to look through some of those things to try to learn what those various terms that he was using refer to so that we can understand the passages. As we begin here, in this chapter, we move from the example of Gomer's unfaithfulness to that of the nation of Israel. So in the first three chapters, he was addressing Gomer primarily, his wife, and how she was being unfaithful to him and had left him, and he was trying to woo her back and bought her back out of slavery. Now he's turning to Israel. The rest of the book, he concentrates on Israel and focuses on them and trying to help them to see the error of their way. Verses 1 to 3, the Lord had a controversy with his people. What does that mean? What's it mean to have a controversy with his people? Any ideas? Yes, ma'am.
Well, they were in conflict.
Okay, so they have conflicts with each other, right?
Yeah.
All right, so a controversy is a strife or a dispute. Okay? All right. Now, there was no truth, mercy, nor knowledge of God. Now, that's a very significant thing. All right? So he tells us that in those first verses there, that there was no truth, knowledge, mercy, or knowledge of God. And these are qualities of God, and the people were ignoring and rejecting God. They needed to know God. They needed to understand God's truth and His mercy. And they were ignoring that and walking after their own sinful ways. And then we see their sins listed in verse number 2. He says, by swearing and lying and killing and stealing and committing adultery, they break out and blood toucheth blood. Right now, as you look at this here, their sins break out or break down all of God's barriers. Right, so when he talks about breaking out, it's the idea that God's got a fence around us. And it's true with us as well. God has a barrier around us, and he's saying, you know, stay within this barrier. And they were breaking outside of that and doing their own thing and being rebellious against God. And it says there that blood touches blood. In other words, one murder right after another. You know, one person's killed, and then somebody else is killed, and another person's killed. And there, it was a violent, wicked society that they had developed there and had come to pass there in Israel. And the whole land, including all the people, the animals, the birds, and the fish, will suffer because of Israel's sin. You know, sin rarely affects only the sinner. Look at verse number 3. Therefore shall the land mourn, and every one that dwelleth therein shall languish. That's another kind of a mourning or grief. And with the beasts of the field, and the fowls of heaven, and the fishes of the sea, it shall all be taken away. All right, so there, it's affecting not only people, but it's affecting nature as well. Their sinfulness because of their rebellion against God. And so all through this book, he's addressing the fact Israel is rebellious toward God, and God's about to send them into captivity, and that's not what God wanted. God was trying to woo them back and to bring them back into truth, but they were not cooperating with God, and they were continuing down the wrong road. Verse number 4 and 5, he talks here about how the people were in no position to argue with God. They were acting like one arguing with the priest. All right, look at verse number 4. Yet let no man strive nor reprove another, for thy people are as they that strive with the priest. Now, what's the significance of that? All right, any ideas on that? Any thoughts? What was significant about striving or arguing with the priest? Well, here's one commentator, Peter Pett. He puts it this way. He says, Israel's priests were the final Supreme Court, and to openly challenge their final decision was seen as worthy of death. All right, and there's an example here in Deuteronomy 17. So the priests of Israel, they were the supreme leaders. Now, who was the first high priest? Aaron was. Okay, Aaron was, and then his sons followed after him when he died. But the priest was the one who made the final decisions for the nation spiritually wise or in various issues that they had to deal with here. So that's important for us to remember. Now, God promised that they would fall in the day. You know. Look at verse number 5. All right, so in verse 5 he says, therefore thou shalt fall in the day, and the prophet also shall fall in the night. And I will destroy thy mother. Lots of hidden information in here. All right, so what's it talking about there? They'll fall by the day. Any ideas on that? Jared?
Maybe by the enemy.
Okay, what's the significance that it was by the day? When he says that the priests would fall by night, or the prophets would fall by night. Any thoughts?
They will fall even if it's like light.
Okay, I think that's a lot of it there. They would trip in the broad daylight, and God would work against them. Right? So even though they could see that in the daylight, they still would fall, and then the prophets there would fall with them in the night, he is a bit more discerning. You know, the prophet, you know, to walk in the nighttime, it's easy to fall because it's dark. But they were discerning. They were the spiritual leaders. They were more discerning. But he said even they would fall. Even they would trip. They would do that they would run into problems because of their sinfulness. And God would destroy Israel's mother. He's speaking here of the nation itself. All right? So Ryrie points that out, that it's talking about the whole nation, but it talks about their mother. It's not just talking about, you know, the one woman that bore them, but it's talking nationally of the nation of Israel. So these are some major problems that are coming upon Israel because of their sin and how they need to turn to God to turn away from
them. Them walking in the night and stumbling because they can't see. You're talking about the fact that it's night time and therefore some things may not have been seen by other people.
Yes.
They're doing things more secretly because it's dark.
Well,
they're still falling in sin.
Yeah, maybe.
No, I don't think it's actually talking about stumbling.
No, it's not. It's, well, see, it's a picture. It's a picture of them tripping spiritually and and falling in the ways of their and their the fact that they are not doing what is right. They're tripping and falling into sin and doing what is displeasing to the Lord.
Yeah.
You know, and we dare not argue with God. He is always right. You know, that's the thing that we need to remember here. And that's what they were struggling with here. They were wanting to do things their way. They didn't want to do things God's way. And they, as a result, they were getting themselves into a lot of problems and a lot of trouble. Okay? And as we move on to the next three verses here, verse 6, God said, "My people are destroyed for what?" A lack of knowledge. They're destroyed for a lack of knowledge.
Lack of wisdom.
So they needed the knowledge. A knowledge of what? Well, a knowledge of God. Right? They had a shortage of they had no shortage of information, but they rejected it.
Yeah.
Right? So they had the information. You know, folks, really that's really what we struggle with. Right? We don't lack information. We've got lots of information in this book. And it tells us how to live. Our problem isn't that we lack information. Our problem is that we don't follow it.
Yeah.
And we don't obey it. And so that makes it more complicated and so for us. So we got to be careful. And there's he gives three results of their lack of knowledge. All right, look at verse number 6. All right, they would be destroyed for lack of knowledge. Why? Because thou hast rejected knowledge. And then because they will, thou shalt be no priest to me, and seeing thou hast forgotten the law. All right, let me just put it down here so we can see it here. That'll make it easier. God would reject them. All right, the result of this is God would reject them. Number two, that they would no longer be priests representing God. And then thirdly, because that they forgot God's law, he would forget their children. God says, "I'm going to turn my back on you because of what you're doing." And that's not what God wants. And we'll see later on in as we work our way through this book that God's passion was to help these people and to rescue them and to deliver them. But they would not listen to God. And that broke God's heart. And we see his heart just bleed, especially toward the end of the book. God's burden for his people. Because of their sin, God would shame them. Verse number 7. "And as they were increased, so they sinned against me. Therefore, I will change their glory into shame." So God says, "I'm going to cause you to be ashamed. You're going to be a shameful nation." And they would eat up sin and have their hearts for iniquity. All right, verse number 8. And, you know, if we lack God's knowledge, we're heading for downfall. And that's an important thing for us to remember. You know, there's probably nothing, once we've become a Christian, there's probably nothing that we need more than to know God. We need to know God. And know Him personally and intimately. And you know, I don't think any of us can say, "I know God as well as I ought to know God." We just don't know God like we should. We need to know Him. And so, as we study the Scriptures, we need to be watching constantly. What is God like? What is he showing me in these passages? What do we see? Even as we look at this, the information here tonight, we can see that God is a jealous God. He's a God that says, I don't want competition. I don't want other people, I don't want my people going after other gods. I want them to be loyal to me. And so he's a jealous God. He's a God who will not endure those kind of things. So we need to remember that we're heading for downfall and that God delights in us knowing him. Those great verses are in Jeremiah 9, 23 and 24. I've quoted them to you many times before, but those are great verses to memorize. He says, let not the wise man glory in his wisdom, neither let the mighty man glory in his might. Let not the rich man glory in his riches, but let him that glorieth glory in this, that he understandeth and knoweth me. That I am the God which exercises love and kindness, judgment and righteousness in the earth. For in these things I delight, saith the Lord. So God said, that's what I delight in. I want you to know me. Yes, Peter.
Isn't it ironic that the punishment for rejecting God, rejecting the priest, rejecting God's knowledge, is having no priest, rejecting and not having God, and not having God's knowledge, indicating it's a bad thing in itself for them, not just for God?
Yes.
It's that their very sin is actually their own punishment.
Yes. It's just taking them away from the very thing that can be of help to them. And we need God, we need the knowledge of God, we need closeness to God, because God is what's the one who sustains us. All right. And then verse number 9, down through verse 11, the people and the priests were alike sinful, and God would punish them both. Verse number 9, and there shall be like people, like priests, and I will punish them for their ways and reward them for their doings. All right, so God said, it's not just the people, but it's also the priests, the leadership. So when the leadership goes wrong, they can't lead the people back to truth. And many times the people, even in Jeremiah's day, Jeremiah was trying to get them to do right, but the people didn't want their leadership to do right. They wanted the leaders to lead them the way that they wanted so that they could do things their way. And God said, that would cause them great grief. And so the people and the priests were going the wrong way and they'd both be punished. The King James Bible commentary states this, says it remains true today, unfortunately, that churches still like to call pastors who will be like them rather than will help them to be like God.
Yeah.
All right. And that's what we need to shy away from. That's what we need to be careful of. You know, when the day comes for our church to call a pastor to take over the work after I retire, you need to make sure you call a pastor that's going to feed your soul and build you up, not somebody that's going to make you feel good. And we don't want that.
Will rapture before then?
Well, I hope so, but you never know.
So you're not retiring, we're coming with you.
All right. They will eat and remain hungry, be immoral and never satisfied. Verse number 10. All right. And for they shall eat and not have enough, and they will commit whoredom and shall not increase because they have left off to take heed to the Lord. All right. So there, when it talks about them committing whoredom, in that some of the time he's talking about literally and other times he's talking about spiritually. And so they're both intertwined here in this chapter. And throughout the whole book, he uses the terminology a lot because Gomer was an immoral woman. So it's really kind of a major theme in the whole book because that was a major problem in Israel. And we're going to see it as we move on here, how serious that was. And to be free from God is to be free from his blessings. And that goes hand in hand with what Peter said just a moment ago. All right. Note what God said took away or captured their hearts. Verse number 11. It said, whoredom and wine and new wine take away the heart. Now that's an important verse. And I want us to think about that for a moment. All right, so he says whoredom. Those are sexual sins. That was one of the things that were taking their heart away from God, is their sexual sins. Number two is wine. It's the term yayin. Yayin is a generic word for wine, which literally means either fresh juice or fermented, can be either way, depending on the context. And then he talks about new wine. That's the word tirash, which always refers to clusters of grapes or fresh squeezed juice. Right? And so he says here, on the one extreme, he's got the immorality and then the wine, which could be either one, either drunkenness or just pleasure. And then the new wine, which is obviously just for pleasure. Right? It was just the juice, and they loved that juice. And I'm doing quite a bit of research and studying into these things just recently. And the people, they craved the sweetness of the juice. You know, we live in a spoiled society, and spoiled to our detriment, unfortunately, that there's so much sweetness everywhere. I mean, everywhere you turn, everything is full of sugar. Well, that wasn't the case in Israel. And so they craved sweet. And that's why the figs were important to them. That's why the dates were important to them. That's why honey was important to them. And that's why these grapes, the grape juice, that sweet grape juice, was very, very key and important to them, because they craved that sweetness. And thankfully it was all wholesome good sweetness as compared to the stuff we have today. But there, nonetheless, we see that both bad things and good things can turn people's hearts away, because people can just, you know, get involved in pleasures that are not necessarily bad, but they can turn their hearts away from God. And so we need to be very careful about that. We see here that even good things can capture the heart. Yes, Gary.
Do you think you could also reference, like, if they had new grapes on the vine, like, as in, like, they are getting so caught up in their success of, oh, my farm, I've got my grapes, you know, like the new season of grapes. That's where their heart's at.
Yeah, well, that would certainly be part of it.
Instead of my God.
Yeah, that would be part of it as well. All right. So there's both sides of that. There, the pleasure, the success, and then also the immorality and the things that they, that was turning them away from the truth. Okay? And then as we move on to verse number 12 to 14, the people prayed to their idols, and God called this spiritual whoredom. Verse number 12, the people asked counsel of their stocks, and their staff declared unto them. Right? So their stocks and their staff are their idols. And so they're praying to these things and seeking them. And for the spirit of whoredom has caused them to err, and they have gone whoring unto their under their God. Right? So they spiritually, they are in love with their idols instead of in love with God. And you know, I think that this is one of the greatest struggles that we face, even today, in struggling to keep our hearts in tune with God. God requires our spiritual faithfulness to Him. If we put anything ahead of Him, it is an idol, whether it be our work, our pleasure, our friends, our entertainment, or anything else. And folks, that's easy to do. We've all been there, done that. Put something ahead of God in our life. You know, maybe it's even in a particular day. Maybe it's not our whole lifestyle. Maybe our whole lifestyle isn't, I don't need God, I'm going to have a focus on getting rich or pleasure or whatever. But even in day by day, we may take a day and say, well, I've got all these plans, and I'm going to do this and this and this and this, and I just don't have time to read my Bible and pray today because I got all the stuff I'm going to do today, and I got all these good things. And they may not even be bad things, but they're things that have robbed our time with God. And God says, I want to be first in your life. And we all struggle with that. I struggle with that, and I know you do too, because that's part of our human nature, to put God first where He needs to be in our lives. And they sacrificed to their gods in the high places. Verse 13, they sacrificed them on the tops of the mountains, and they burned incense in the hills, and under the oaks, and under the poplars, and the elms, and for the shadow of them was good. There are all these sacrifices. When you read about the high places in the Bible, the high places were not good. Right? There were some times that the people of Israel actually did worship God in the high places, but that wasn't what God wanted, because the high places were these mountaintops where they had good view of everything around, and they'd plant a grove of trees on there, so it talks about the grove. Sometimes the grove may have been even like totem poles where they carved out images on a pole, and planted them in the ground, but they were made out of wood. But they, a lot of times, I think it was dealt with the trees that were there. They liked the shade, so they'd get up there on the top of the hill, and they'd hide under the shade of the tree, and they'd worship their gods and pray to their false gods and their idols. And God saw all this stuff, even though they were trying to hide it from him. Therefore, God says that their daughters and their spouses would commit sexual sins because, against the fathers and the husbands. All right, so, end of verse 13 there, he says, therefore your daughters shall commit whoredom and your spouses shall commit adultery. All right, so God says, you're doing this to me. You're up there committing spiritual adultery with all of your idols and all of your graven images. And God says, because you're doing that, I'm going to allow your women to do the same thing to betray you. And he says, it's going to grieve you. In verse number 14, he says, I will not punish your daughters when they commit whoredoms, nor your spouses when they commit adultery. For themselves are separated with whores, and they sacrifice with the harlots. Therefore, the people that doth not understand shall fall. All right, so God says, when this happens, and they are committing immorality, I'm not going to punish them. I'm going to let them go with it. And it's going to grieve you. And you know, that there's probably nothing more painful to a marriage than to have this, one of the spouses be unfaithful. That is extremely painful. And many times that's disaster for the marriage. And then how grievous it must be for a parent to have their children, you know, go off into that kind of a lifestyle and start living like that. Well, anymore, it doesn't seem to bother anybody. That's what half the nation does. But it, you know, for Christians, that ought to grieve us if our children go off into that kind of a lifestyle and live immorally. And God says, I'm not going to punish them because they, that's exactly what you are doing to me. And so therefore, I'm going to let them do it. And that God would not punish them, but allow them to hurt their own loved ones. You know, the devil wants us to think that our sin is our own business. That is not true. When we sin, we hurt others. Hurt those that we love most. You know, and that is so true. Especially these kind of sins. They are hurting those that we truly love the most. And so we need to be very, very careful in these regards. Now, Hosea was warning Israel, but Judah must also take heed. All right, so as you look at the map of Israel again, just to refresh our minds, the green part is Israel, the northern kingdoms. Judah is the yellow down at the bottom. Around the edges are more of an orange-yellow. Those are the foreign nations. All right? So that, again, it just reminds us of where they are and how they are laid out there. Israel's in the green and Judah's in the yellow. And the orange there is the other countries. All right? So just to help us to see, God's saying, Israel, I'm dealing with you, but Judah, you better take heed. And, you know, he was writing this about 100 years before Judah went foul as well. And Judah did not listen, and they did not learn, and they went and followed the same pattern that Israel went, and they got the same kind of a punishment Israel got. They were sent into captivity. All right. Now, verses 15 to 17, though this is addressed to Israel, God sternly warns Judah not to offend. Verse number 15. He says, though thou Israel play the harlot, yet let not Judah offend. So God's just pleading with them. I do not want Judah to offend. I don't want Judah to go that route. And so he's giving Judah warning. And this Hosea was speaking to the northern kingdom in the top, but at the same time those in the south would hear it and read it as well. Gilgal had once been a place of Elisha's school of prophets. But now it was a place of idolatry. All right, so we see there later on in verse 15, it says, and come not unto Gilgal. All right, so Gilgal had been a good place. It had been a place of training, and it was like a Bible school area, but it had turned into a place of idolatry. And then neither go up to Bethaven nor swear. Bethaven is an interesting place. Bethaven, some people say that it's a place that's right next to Bethel. Others say that it was actually a nickname for Bethel. Because it, being a nickname, it literally means a place of vanity. And Bethel means a house of God or something similar to that. So the place of vanity was the probably just a mockery type of a name for this place where they had their idolatry. All right, so remember, what were the two cities that where they housed the golden calves? Gerard?
Bethel.
Bethel
and Dan.
All right, so Dan and Bethel. Dan was way at the top, and Bethel was right down there at the border with Judah. Okay? And to swear the Lord liveth in this context was to claim loyalty to the Lord while worshiping idols. We see there at the end of verse 15, he says, and they swear the Lord liveth. So they're being hypocrites. They're saying, the Lord lives. We believe that. But then they go and worship their idols. And you know, that's where we need to be real careful, because we can fall into that same kind of a trap. All of us would say, of course the Lord lives, and He's our Savior, and we love Him, and we sing the songs of praise to Him. But yet, if we say all that with our mouth, and then we're not living it in our life, then we're being a hypocrite just like they were. And God says, that's not what I want. I want you to live what you claim to know and what you claim to believe. And then He talks about a backsliding heifer. Anybody know what a backsliding heifer is? John Ray.
Somebody is going the wrong way.
John Ray.
So, I think in the context it's referring to a woman that's backsliding. The heifer usually refers to a woman, not a man. Heifer's cow.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. All right. A young female cow. All right. It was a heifer. Well, he's talking about the nation as a whole. But when he refers to the nation, he calls them a backsliding heifer. What's the word backsliding refer to?
Going the wrong way.
Okay. Yes. But it's more than that. All right. Here's the heifer is the female cow. The backsliding speaks of being stubborn or rebellious. So it isn't just heading the wrong direction. They're being stubborn and rebellious. And, you know, growing up on the farm, I can attest to that. Calves can be so stubborn. You try to get them to do one thing and they'll do the other. And so sometimes the way to get them to do what you want them to do is make them think that you want to go the other way, and they'll go the way you want them to go. They're so stubborn. And he talks here about Israel, and he calls them a backsliding heifer. Ephraim is another name for Israel. We've seen that in the past, so we need to keep that in mind. Judah must never leave him alone. All right, Judah must leave him alone. So he's telling him again, reminding Judah, stay away from Ephraim, leave him alone. And then verse 18 and 19, their drink, they had soured and gone bad. Look at verse 18, and their drink is sour. And they have committed whoredom and continually. Her rulers with shame do love give ye. All right, so here he's just talking about their spiritual whoredom was continual. And they love their shameful sins and the things that were not right. And the winds of God's destruction will blow sudden destruction upon their sinful nation. The last verse there. And the wind has bound up her in the wings, and they shall be ashamed because of their sacrifices. So sin never profits the sinner. All right? It will sour, it'll dominate, it'll bring shame, and ultimately it will yield God's judgment. And we've all seen that. We've all felt that. You know, we do something wrong, we think it's going to be, you know, something we enjoy, and it never is. It's always painful, it always hurts, it always gets us into trouble, and it always makes us wish we hadn't done what we did. And so sin does not play fair, but that's just the way the devil is. He doesn't play fair. And good verses to remember here, Galatians 6, 7, and 8. Be not deceived, God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to the flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, and he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. So we reap what we sow. Got to be on guard all the time. All right, just take a look at a few of the similes. And there's probably some in here that I missed as well. But one of them there is as they strive with the priest. We talked about that, of how there was rebellion against the high court, and God uses that as an illustration there. And then sliding back is a backsliding heifer, that's stubbornly refusing to obey God. God tells them one thing and they wanted to do the other. Some of the metaphors, he deals a lot with whoredom and adultery. There's lots and lots of metaphors in there with those throughout the chapter, particularly in this chapter. There's a lot of them in there too, as a reminder. Okay. Some applications for us to ponder as we go our way tonight. First of all, Israel did not turn from God overnight. It happened gradually over time. And what will keep us from slipping into the same downward slide? We've got to ask ourselves that kind of a question. What's it going to do that'll keep us from doing that? You know, we must know God's truth. We need to know what is true and what is right. We need to embrace God's mercy, His kindness and faithfulness. We need to just trust Him. And we must have a growing knowledge of God and understanding what God is really like and how He acts. And what offends Him, what pleases Him, how it must hurt Him when we disobey and sin against Him.